muscle is the organ of longevity, and we can move the needle in a positive manner by having a muscle-centric approach is really having a capable approach to all domains of life, regardless of whatever camp you are into, whether it's animal-based or whether it is plant-based. The concept of protein should not be divisive.
Okay, welcome back, or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. My name is Dr. Michael Gervais, and by trade and training, I'm a sport and performance psychologist. I love this podcast. I love these conversations. The people we get to learn from, the insights that they share, the best practices. I mean, we really are at ground zero for some of the best in the world sharing how they've organized their inner life to be able to express their potential, and at the same time, to be able to help others do the same. Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time in early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing. It just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product, and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's Hims, HIMS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Now, in this week's conversation, it's with Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. So she's a functional medicine physician, and she's also the founder of the Institute for Muscle-Centric Medicine. So she received her doctorate in osteopathic medicine from the Arizona College of Osteopathic Medicine. She's also board certified in family medicine. So There's a unique combination between her osteopathic training and her undergraduate degree training in human nutrition, where she specialized in vitamin and mineral metabolism. So now, in her private practice, she leverages evidence-based medicine with emerging cutting-edge science to help restore metabolism, to help balance hormones, and then to optimize body composition with the goal of lifelong vitality. A world-class athlete that has been setting the standard for her sport for a long time referred Gabrielle to me. And that's pretty much how her practice looks. CEOs, military operators like Navy SEALs, Green Berets, Army Rangers, people really pushing. She's also working with the Canadian Special Forces as well. In a world where vegetarianism and veganism have seemingly become the gold standard for health, Gabrielle says, wait, hold on. That's cool. I'm not saying that that's not okay, but she's putting a tall flag in the ground saying there's something that you must, if you're choosing that way, you must get right. And she's using evidence-based to be able to have this conversation. And I loved listening to how she put it together. She knows her stuff. It's amazing. And she's deeply interested in both health and longevity. So we work to understand nutrition, lifestyle, and the importance of, this is the tall flagpole for her, protein, and how from her perspective, muscle health is the ultimate key to extending and enhancing health span. And with that, let's jump right into this week's conversation with Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. Gabrielle, how are you?
I'm doing great.
So a mutual friend of ours, a legend in her own right, puts us together. And so Kerry Walsh Jennings, one of the forces, the most winning forces in volleyball, you know, professional Olympic volleyball. She and I were talking and she says, I got someone I want you to meet. I said, great, tell me about it. And she said, you know what? I'm not going to do it service, but you guys need to know each other. And our first conversation that we had, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Like, I can't wait to share your insights with our community. So can you maybe start with a quick high level overview of what you're doing as in professional terms right now?
Yeah. So really there's two major avenues that I would say I am approaching. Number one is for everybody listening, everything that they thought they knew about obesity and longevity is wrong. And I am on a mission to course correct that. And the other part of what I do is I have a concierge medical practice in which I take care of real change makers, individuals like Kerry, and a portion of my practice is dedicated to special operations in the military.
Yeah. So you have a good understanding of those that are right at the tip of the arrow, the tip of the spear, that are pushing to the edges, you know, those pioneers that are requiring much from their mind and their body.
Very much so.
Yeah. And then, you know, I don't think folks have enough of appreciation about the training that you come from. And so can you talk about that? Because it's not a traditional MD and there's probably pros and cons to that you run into, but can you talk about your training?
Yeah, I would love to. So the training is very long. And I've had some incredible mentors, real masters in their craft. And I started my undergraduate in human nutrition, vitamin mineral metabolism at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, under the mentorship who now mentors me still 20 years later under a professor emeritus named Dr. Donald Lehman. And for your listener, he cringes when I say this, one of the godfathers of protein metabolism. Really made some incredible contributions as it relates to muscle health and ultimately longevity. So I did my undergraduate with him. Then I went off to medical school and I went to medical school in Arizona, which it was called Midwestern. It was an osteopathic school. I was very interested in sports medicine at the time. And for someone who doesn't know what osteopathic medicine is, it's actually the same licensure as an MD. But so prescriptions are the same, capacity to do surgery is the same, everything is the same, except for additional training in the musculoskeletal system. Then I did 2 years at the University of Louisville and an MD residency in psychiatry, believe it or not. I was extraordinarily interested in the mind. And, you know, I really think that that helped me. If I were to think about all the things that helped me the most as it relates to integrating communication, I would say that that was it. Then I did 3 years of traditional family medicine at North Shore LIJ, and then a postdoc in obesity medicine, geriatrics, and nutritional sciences, which was also MD training at WashU, Washington University in St. Louis.
So the reason I wanted to set that up is because, you know, we know what a PhD, MD, you know, is, but that track is actually that you've taken, there's a unique special understanding that I think is required for most people. So this is why I wanted to talk to you, is because you have deep traditional roots and also you've specialized in how the body works.
Yeah.
And so all that being said, from a more of a functional standpoint, so all that being said, is I know what we're going to get into is kind of a muscle-centric conversation about well-being. Mm-hmm. But when we think about kind of the big frameworks that you're working from, you want to go from to, if we use that as a framework,
yeah.
You want to go from conversations about obesity to, you know, can you walk us through a couple from twos for you?
Yeah. I really love that. And I think that this conversation about obesity touches everybody, whether, you know, if it doesn't touch the individual, we know for a fact it's touched someone in their life, whether it's a parent, whether it's a brother, a sister, a coworker. And this idea and conversation around obesity is very limiting. It's a problem we've been trying to correct for decades. And when I think about a problem and then a solution, if we are asking the appropriate question, there is a subsequent solution, right? The answer comes and we are effective and efficient at treating it. And this really goes back to during my training when I did clinical research and then saw patients. So we worked with not rat models, but actual human subjects. And there was a moment in my research where I really felt like we were failing everybody. We were failing, the medical society was failing this idea of health, wellness, and longevity. And, you know, if you permit me, I will tell you very quickly an abbreviated version of this story. We were doing a weight loss study, and this was an amazing woman, and she was a mother of three in her late 40s, early 50s, and she always struggled with 10, 15 pounds. And I went to image her brain. And this struggle of not just obesity, but really the fact that she had very little muscle, I imaged her brain and her brain looked like an Alzheimer's brain. And I realized at this moment that here this woman had tried all of these things, had put a tremendous amount of effort. And we as a community, as a medical society, had failed her. And probably the failure wasn't just us, but it was overtly this messaging. And it was at that moment that this concept of muscle-centric medicine was born, and this idea that, you know, we must shift from a fat-focused perspective to muscle-centric when we think about empowerment. And that goes far beyond athletics. It really ends up being the foundation for health and wellness that arguably is completely misinterpreted and totally missed. So that's kind of what happened.
Okay. So if you were to have like this guiding hope that people would take away from this conversation, what would you hope that they say? Because we're going to get into some weeds here, but what would be, before we kind of set that nuanced conversation up, what would be the guiding hope that you have for people?
That they understand muscle is the organ of longevity. That your trajectory of capacity is all based on muscle. And again, separate from performance, but truly as this organ system that really needs to be leveraged for health and wellness.
Okay, it's really important for two things. One is most people refer to muscle as tissue, but we know it's not tissue, it's an organ.
Right.
So can you double click there for just a minute and just illuminate the science underneath you don't need to take it too far. I was going to say, what's the difference between tissue and organ? But most people think about muscle as tissue.
Right.
So, and it's well accepted that it is, and it's also an organ. So can you talk about the organ structure?
Yeah, of course. You're absolutely correct when we think about skeletal muscle. And obviously the people that you interface with, you know, they're very high achieving individuals, and muscle for them and the majority of individuals right now is fitness focused. And when I say fitness, I mean, it's about cardiovascular health, or it's about, you know, being strong and capable, and it's all those things. And it is an endocrine organ. In fact, it is the largest endocrine organ in the entire body, based on weight. It makes up 40% of our body weight. And when you contract skeletal muscle, it secretes these things called myokines, which are proteins that actually interface inter-organ systems. It interfaces with the immune system. It interfaces with the brain. It interfaces with the bone. It interfaces with every tissue in our body based on these myokines. It's above and so we do leverage fitness to stimulate skeletal muscle, but skeletal muscle in and of itself is an endocrine organ that, you know, it's really interesting. As a society, whether we use it or not is totally up to us. You could probably go an entire day and not get up and move around. You could probably not train hard. And, you know, for other individuals who have trained their whole life, perhaps they always look fit. But it's really understanding that it is this critical pinnacle of health and wellness above and beyond fitness, and its interface with all tissues in our body as a broad overview.
Perfect. And then if we double click on this just really quickly, like as just an applied framework, everybody's going to be different is the easy answer that you would say to this question. But general recommendations for doing something with weights, resistance, where you're stressing that organ in the appropriate ways.
In fact, it's a non-negotiable. And when you think about general recommendations for everybody, I want to set the framework for what actually happens to that tissue if it is not very much focused on and managed. And that is, over time, skeletal muscle becomes what we call anabolically resistant. And I'm going to kind of lay the framework and the foundation for understanding so that the recommendations I give make a ton of sense to everybody, and they can get off this podcast or YouTube and immediately implement something that will help them with longevity and aging and wellness, right? And that can start at any age. One thing that happens that we know, skeletal muscle, that tissue changes over time. Now, cognitively and visually, we see that. We see older individuals get sarcopenic. We even see elite athletes change in their structure. Their muscles get smaller. I'm sure you deal with that all the time. And certainly as they transition from, say, a peak of a physical career, there's kind of a slow decline. Skeletal muscle, are you ready for this? Is actually a nutrient sensing organ. Skeletal muscle.
Sure. Yeah. I've never heard it said, and it makes perfect sense.
It makes sense.
Amino acids, fill in the blank, right?
Exactly. And its capacity to sense and its efficiency decreases the older we get.
So the application of that is that
if you eat the way that you did in your 20s or even at the prime of your physical fitness, then you are not necessarily going to be leveraging the amino acid dosing necessary to protect that skeletal muscle. Simply said, skeletal muscle requires a meal threshold, a bolus amount of protein as individuals age. Dietary protein becomes more important to protect skeletal muscle the older we are. Not less important. And it needs to be ingested in a meal threshold. So for the listener, that would be between 30 and 50, 55 grams of protein.
Whoa, 50. Listen, you're the expert here. And I'm going to tell you what I've been thinking for a long time. This is why I love these conversations, because you're going to course correct me. I've always been under the assumption, and this is maybe old data, that I'm not processing more than 30 grams per 3 hours of protein, somewhere like plus or minus five, you know, like somewhere in that range. So most of my meals are around that. And I know, like, if I'm getting a 40 to 50, it feels like, I just can't get enough complex carbs in the meal to like I'm too full and it's like oversaturated on protein as opposed to healthy fat and carbs. But of course, just stay on the protein. I'm sorry to introduce all of those variables. Just stay on the protein, 30 to 50. And it wait, that's gotta be size dependent at some level or efficiency dependent.
It's not sex dependent or size dependent, which is really important. You can tell that you've kind of been in this game for a long time because you're bringing up really good points. Mm-hmm. Really, first of all, the 30 grams of protein, you can absorb all the protein that you ingest, right? Whether you're ingesting 30 to 80, you absorb all of that protein. From a muscle perspective, once you hit 50, 55 grams, you do no benefit for skeletal muscle.
There it is.
Right.
So it's so plus 50, 55.
Yeah. So you absorb all of it. You can use it for tissue turnover, but from a skeletal muscle perspective, totally unnecessary.
Got it. Okay.
The other part of that that I think is really astute is-
Wait, yeah. Before we go on, like, give a visual, like a chicken breast is 30, right?
So
Like a US-based, four ounces would be a minimum.
So
4 ounces, but that would sit in your hand in a reasonable way, like, right?
Yes. And that's actually a minimum amount. Now, you said something really astute, which goes back to the 30 grams. When you are younger, then you get the same muscle effect at 30 grams. So your youthful tissue would likely be optimized at 30 grams.
That's what's happening.
In your 20s.
Right.
But as you become more mature, the ability to sense those amino acids decreases. And if your listener is, say they put on weight during the pandemic, or they are struggling with some chronic health issue, or they're in a highly catabolic state where they're really burning through nutrients, the tissue really requires that bolus amount of protein to stimulate that muscle protein synthesis.
Wait, what is the word you're using, bolus?
Yeah, so a meal threshold, a meal threshold.
Okay.
Protein, or I should say, so there's 20 amino acids, 20 amino acids that the human interfaces with, dietary amino acids.
11 that are essential?
Nine of which are essential.
Nine
are essential. Things like histidine, we don't necessarily need it past the growth phase. Of those nine essential, the branch chain amino acids, which simply relates to the structure of the amino acid, of those nine essential, leucine, of the branch chains, there's leucine, isoleucine, and valine. And leucine is the amino acid that is necessary for stimulating muscle tissue, no matter what.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, hydro.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. And I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you go check them out. Let's go back up just for one level. Yeah. Is that the reason, because you hit on something I want to take us down a path, but I want to go back up really quickly, is that the reason we want to maintain that organ and that tissue to be healthy is because it is directly linked to overall vitality, wellness, well-being, let alone performance. We are not talking about performance yet. The performance of when you get into your 60s, 70s, 80s and not falling down because like you lack mobility or strength and or bone density.
Right.
Lifting heavy things does two things, right? It sends signals to your brain like, oh, you need to be strong. That's good. Mm-hmm. The tissue needs to respond in a particular way to that. And then also it helps with bone density.
Right.
Both of those take place. So, but let's go back up. Do I have that framing right? That's why you are, one of the main reasons why you're saying, let's over-rotate on muscle health and get that as a first principle for overall vitality.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And another level to that is when we think about the diseases that we're seeing in our society, everybody talks about insulin resistance, right? Insulin resistance, obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's. Do you know where that one of the primary defects is in the body? Before, a decade before this even manifests, are you ready? Are you ready to have your mind blown? Skeletal muscle. Insulin resistance can begin a decade before. And there's a study out of Yale. His name is Gerald Shulman. He is a really great researcher and he's been working on this data for a very long time. He has shown that individuals that are healthy sedentary, which by the way, I don't believe that healthy and sedentary can go in the same sentence, but a healthy sedentary 20-year-old shows signs of skeletal muscle insulin resistance before you see any changes on their blood work. So what I'm saying—
if you dropped healthy from that and just said a sedentary 20-year-old—
Insulin resistant.
Okay. And for folks that aren't familiar with why that's insulin resistance is such an important framing, can you explain that just quickly?
Insulin resistance is, you know, we've all heard about carbohydrates and, you know, or many people have heard carbohydrates, and insulin is a peptide hormone that is released from the pancreas and moves glucose out. So glucose in general is cytotoxic. It's a toxic molecule to tissues. We need it, but it needs to be out of the bloodstream. It needs to be utilized. The way in which your body utilizes it is it can be moved through exercise, movement, and insulin. So insulin is what moves glucose out of the bloodstream. One of the major defects, one of the major issues that we are seeing is insulin resistance, meaning the body is overproducing insulin because it is no longer as sensitive to it. And we're really overworking the body. Our levels of, you know, glucose are much too high. And we're aging much earlier and we're becoming frail much earlier. And we're dealing with diseases like heart disease, which kills a tremendous amount of people, Alzheimer's, again, cardio, you know, all of these diseases of aging can, many of them can be linked back to skeletal muscle health.
Okay. And you would say that more importantly than like the high fructose corn syrup. Obviously, that's going to impact, you know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. So this is what's so important is people are saying, well, you know, we're getting fatty liver, you know, high fructose corn syrup. Yes, all that's a problem. You cannot exercise your liver. But what you can do is you can improve your muscle health to then as a focal point to then deal with all other aspects.
And okay, that's in a crazy way, if somebody has really healthy muscular organ system mm-hmm. and tissue yeah. and strong, nimble, flexible, you know, highly mobile, all those things that we would consider, would you say that they would have a higher tolerance to shitty food like fructose yes. corn syrup?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Uh-huh.
And obviously we're not trying to like play some silly game there. We're trying to say like, drop those toxins, you know, that are loaded up in sugary drinks and,
yeah.
and then, but listen, first lever, first primary mover is get your muscle system in place.
Right.
And then, right. Okay. Keep going. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
going.
And also if you can hear my baby screaming, I'll have the nanny. Do you hear the baby screaming?
No, it's good. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's I'm like texting the nanny. Get that baby.
Is the nanny screaming so or cute. The baby screaming? It's a difference.
Yeah. Like, Leonidas, he's 18 months.
Oh, cool. Oh, so wait, you have an 18 month old.
I have a 2.5. I have an almost 3 and an 18 month year old. Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. Good segue here. What are you doing for sleep?
A fan and earplugs.
Okay. So is your sleep compromised at 18 months?
No.
It's not compromised.
No. My kid kicks me in the head, you know, because Shane gets up at 4:30 in the morning. So she's been up with me, but no, absolutely not.
Wow. No. So you figured out sleep with a new
baby. Oh, yes. We're a military family. No.
Okay.
No. Yes.
So did you change any of your nutrition by being a new mom?
Did I change any of my nutrition by being a new mom? When I was breastfeeding, my diet was higher in carbohydrates and higher in fat, I would say, but otherwise, no.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, good. Yep. And then while we're here on motherhood, can you talk a little about nutrition and perimenopause, menopause, menstruation? Can you talk to the women in our community about, you know, anything here that we would normally miss because we just don't have this conversation enough?
I would love to. Number one, so skeletal muscle is key here. And so this is, I work with a ton of women in and around these age groups. And when you think about what skeletal muscle does is it's the primary site for glucose disposal. So you were talking earlier about complex carbs. Muscle is the primary site for that disposal. When women are going through hormonal changes, they are primed to lose skeletal muscle mass at that time. Hormones dip, whether it's estrogen, testosterone, these hormones dip, their spontaneous activity decreases. We don't exactly know why, but when women are going through menopause, we see a redistribution of body weight centrally. And this actually can be avoided. And I'm going to give you a couple tips as to how that happens. Number one, really getting a good sense of what the calories are that you are ingesting. And people will argue that calories don't matter as long as it's coming from high quality food. That is absolutely not true. At the end of the day, you have to understand how many calories that you're ingesting. So number one, based on that, you have to prioritize dietary protein. Here's why. And I'll give you my recommendation. 1 gram per pound ideal body weight. This is extremely important for women who are going through menopause, perimenopause, or even trying to lose that extra baby weight. Really, really important information. 1 gram per pound ideal body weight.
So if somebody wanted to be 125, I have no idea what the numbers are. Yeah. I know what my wife weighs, but I don't know what the average one weighs.
And I would recommend 125 grams of dietary protein.
Yeah, but that's not what she weighs, but just to be clear.
Maybe 110 pounds, right? Like 110 pounds. Mm-hmm. 110 pounds, 110 grams of dietary protein. She should prioritize this
per day.
Per day, which is most important. That 24-hour period, the 24-hour protein hierarchy is most important. again, you can do all sorts of things like meal distribution, which we talked about earlier, that leucine amino acid level, all very important. But for women who really want body recomposition and who are up against hormonal changes and or not getting sleep, you know, post baby, 1 gram per pound ideal body weight, number one. Number two, choosing the sources of protein. So I actually recommend choosing lean sources of protein. And that just means really leaner cuts. So there's a big push for, you know, ketogenic diets, adding fats. I don't think that you have to do any of that. I think that you really need to choose low-fat dairies. If you're having dairy, low-fat dairy and low-fat meats, then you can build on carbohydrates. Now, carbohydrates are interesting because you have to earn your carbs. And I typically start individuals at between 90 and 100 grams of carbs. They can titrate up or titrate down depending on activity level. The next layer for that, and the studies that actually I worked on, so I ran a weight management clinic, and the studies that I worked on were for women in this age group, quite frankly. So I did this in Dr. Donald Lehman's lab, and then I did this in my postdoc at WashU. And one of the things that is really important to understand is that while we think about protein in a 24-hour period, we often think about carbohydrates in a 24-hour period. You shouldn't do that. There is a meal threshold for carbohydrates. And I see this especially important for women. And you're like, okay, well, what is the meal threshold? Women should really not go over 40 grams of carbohydrates per meal if they are not being active. Because it generates, you know, we talked about that insulin, a more robust insulin response. So if you go ahead.
What does 40 grams of a complex carb look like?
So complex carb, gosh, well, let's see, in a half a, I don't know, maybe a half a cup of oatmeal is like what, 27 grams of carbs or, you know, they could just calculate it out, but you know, it's not above.
It gets tricky for me when I think about, when I try to sort out like how many asparagus and how many, you know.
So that's, like, you're not going to hit that, right?
Yeah.
So right, now you're talking about vegetables, you're good.
Yeah.
High fiber, even fruits, you know, fruits are, they're great. And, you know, I typically look at the carbohydrate to fiber ratio, which you can, you know, there's plenty of PubMed studies where it actually shows carbohydrate to fiber ratio and, or, you know, really choosing those high fiber fruits like berries. And then of course, vegetables, they're full of fiber, but this is really important for understanding that the nutrition as it relates to perimenopause, women, you know, typically are less active and the hormones are changing. If they prioritize protein, it improves satiation. And it also pushes the needle for that thermic effect of food, meaning for the energy it takes to utilize the dietary protein. And we're not talking about structurally denaturing it, but actually because of its impact on muscle health. Mm-hmm. You utilize these processes. So you end up, how do I say this? Storing less. Dietary protein is very difficult to store as body fat. It's like nearly impossible. Very difficult to overeat.
Okay. So the last thing here, and then I want to go to like something a little bit controversial that your community definitely lit up about. I'll get to that in a second. Is
my community lights up about a lot of things, but
yeah, it was fun. It was fun doing the research, seeing like
where I apologize in advance for that.
the kind of lightning bolt moments are. So, All right, intermittent fasting. Let's just talk about that. So, let's say that you're trying to get 125 grams, and you said something really important: ideal body weight.
Yeah.
So first, that means that your understanding of ideal is healthy. So there's some variance in there that we need to make sure that is accurate, if you will. Is that the same for men? When I was doing a bunch of sport and lifting, it was like somewhere near like 2.2 pounds per kilogram of lean tissue is what I was doing. It was, I think it was too much, but what do you do for men?
So for men, I definitely start with that recommendation for protein. Men see, you know, it really depends
on. You start with one pound?
1 gram per pound ideal body weight, because nobody knows their lean muscle mass. And also, it's very difficult to overeat dietary protein. It's just, I mean, there's like a chicken breast threshold. you're not, if, you know, here's your chicken breast. You're not hungry. You are not, I mean, you're not going to eat that. If you see a, you know, like I just got a surprise for my husband, some paleo, I don't know, carrot cupcakes. If I'm like, honey, are you hungry? Here's your chicken breast. He's like, no. And then I'll show him the carrot cupcake. He's like, oh yeah, no, I'm totally hungry. There is a threshold. The way protein stimulates gut hormones, individuals are much less likely to overeat it. There is somewhat of a threshold, just a natural response in the body. So for men, you know, really prioritizing protein too, because again, it really ultimately comes down to two things: health of skeletal muscle, which that changes as we age. We must account for the dietary protein and really account for, you know, we don't want our muscle to look like a marbled steak, which ultimately will happen if you do not prioritize protein and train to create that flux. That marbleized fat, that kind of marbleized fat, connective tissue, that's what happens. Mm. And it changes metabolism. So when people say my metabolism slowed down, really what they're saying is my muscle mass health decreased. My muscle health decreased.
I totally get that, because the old understanding that however many pounds of muscle and fat ratio, I can't remember the conversion. Yep. You can help, that's probably the tip of your tongue, but X number pounds of fat versus X number pounds of muscle, muscle is heavier. And it's also way more efficient for metabolism and other areas of the body. So,
and you can leverage it. And you actually cognitively come beyond the resistance. So one of the things, you know, just mention this with perimenopausal, menopausal women, weight gain, I definitely recommend high intensity interval training. Improves insulin sensitivity, even a cardiovascular base, which a lot of people will say, well, you know, I'm done with cardio. No, do it. The more activity, the better. Obviously you need a well-designed program, but, you know, we are actually largely domesticated, and this domestication, you know, if you just separate all the noise, the issues with it really come down to skeletal muscle as an organ system. And as that begins to degrade, then you have these subsequent issues like menopausal weight gain, like sarcopenic obesity, like these major changes in body composition that happen, which we chalk up to being normal part of aging, which I do not feel that it is.
Okay. And then before we go to intermittent conversation, there's an easy thing that happens for many people where they say lifting weights, like, I don't want to bulk up. I don't want to feel bulky. I want to look good in my clothes. And like, I don't want to have traps pushing up into my ears. And, you know, it's easy for us to respond and say, that's not how it works, but that's not the perception for many people. Yeah. By the way, I wish that if I could just do a little bit of training, I'd be popping out of my clothes. Like, I've got to work way damn too hard for it. But so how do you address that concern or that fear that is obviously not valid?
You know, right. So that is one big fear that people have, that they don't want to bulk up. And the reality is, like you pointed out before, is as you change body composition, you don't really get bigger. You get smaller, you get tighter. And the amount of effort that it actually takes to put on muscle in a perfect world is exponentially more difficult. You know, and I will say women typically, so if a man, an untrained young man, could put on 24 pounds of muscle in a year, which would be incredibly difficult.
It's incredibly difficult.
A woman would be able to put on half that. You know, you've got hormones and just the musculature. It's very difficult. It's very, very difficult.
Okay, good to know. And then, so let's do intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
So if I've got to get in, what am I weighing right now? Like 180. So if I've got to get 180 grams a day in, and I'm restricting my feeding window, and I'm fasting for 16 hours, like I don't know how to do that. I honestly, like, I've got to get four meals of like 50 grams, you know, or 40 grams to get close. So like, how do I do that?
For you, you definitely want to front load that first meal, optimizing for 50 grams, and you want to actually backload that last meal at 50 grams.
Okay.
I would be very, and then this way, I know you're going to protect your tissue. So we've optimized for that first meal at 50. We've optimized for that last meal at 50. As you go into an overnight fast, I feel very confident that, you know, we're optimizing for protein, protecting your muscle. Then if you, it's going to be very hard to hit that 180. So then if you had another meal where it was maybe 30 grams, I would be okay with it. So now you're at 130 grams. You're on somewhat of a calorie restriction, but you and I have decided that we're going to add in your branched chain amino acids. We're going to add in a branched chain amino acid in that middle meal. I'm okay with, as long as your first and your last meal are really optimized, I feel comfortable. And then again, our goal is we're not looking for hypertrophy right now. You are interested in probably maintaining body weight, maintaining body composition. This is a way I would do it. That's how I would do it.
Okay. Nothing wrong with hypertrophy, but no, you're saying I would need more. Yeah, I would need
more. Then that would not be an ideal strategy for hypertrophy. If your goal is hypertrophy, then I would say we push you out to three or four meals.
And then you would say drop that window from 16 hour restriction to 12.
Yes. So, yes, time restricted. So intermittent fasting is not ideal for hypertrophy, right? Because you're forcing yourself. Now, it's great for a lot of things as it relates to calorie control, as it relates to bowel rest, as it relates to circadian entrainment, right? We always think about light, but food is one of the bigger, one of the biggest drivers of circadian entrainment. Yep. From a body composition maintenance standpoint, time restricted feeding is fine. For a hypertrophy standpoint, it's not optimal.
Finding Mastery is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be a bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code Finding Mastery at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code Finding Mastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being, but it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to aquatrue.com. You spell it AQUATRU.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's aquatrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there. Lastly, on that is, can you still, like at a 12-hour restriction, can you still get into an autophageal phase where you're cleansing some of that, those toxins?
I think that there are many ways to, you know, so when we think about autophagy, to set the stage for that, we're really thinking about getting rid of old tissue, old cells, and allowing for house cleaning. And in and of itself, it's a very complex process, and there's multiple ways to do it, whether it's fasted training, whether it's time-restricted feeding, whether it's protein restriction, whether it's 24-hour fast. I think that there's multiple ways to do it, including even calorie restriction. Do I believe that you can still do it in that way? Yes. And I would say if autophagy is kind of a goal, what are ways to do it that you could implement strategically? And I would say a better target, a way to think about it, or an optional way to think about it would be every month for 3 days, you're going to do a restricted type feeding scenario. Or every 3 months, you're going to do a protocol that is very specific and implementable for autophagy.
Okay. And so you would, okay. So then the suggestion would be like once a month doing a 72-hour fast. Is that
24 hours? Yes. And I think that there's no way to determine, again, I think it's a very complex topic. I think that autophagy is one piece of it. There's something else called the integrated stress response. So there's all different layers to autophagy. And the question is what is the baseline? Like, what is the outcome? What is the health outcome we're looking for? And how do we take that health outcome and implement a strategy that is appropriate for that?
Is autophagy important to you?
It is. Is it my primary focus? I would say I'm very obsessed with muscle health. Very obsessed with muscle health based on my training. And I think autophagy is really easy to get into. Like it's really easy to do. I'll give you an example. On my podcast, my first episode, I had a woman, a PhD, world-renowned protein restriction expert on to have this conversation about autophagy. And what shocked me is that actually autophagy is very easy to implement, whether it's, you could implement it in a day, right? And it doesn't need to be thought of as this daily thing.
Oh, see, like maybe I have this backwards because my thought was always like, so as part of the conversation of longevity, meaning health span, lifespan, that I want to be great at this. I want to clean out the toxins, right? Like on a regular basis and not do it just once a month house cleaning. So did I have that wrong?
I think you bring up a really good point. And I would say the best thing would be, really keeping calories in check. And the next thing to that is what is longevity defined as? So is longevity defined as 6 hours longer, 6 months longer? What are we thinking about? And in my mind, when we talk about longevity,
I'm actually not interested in longer. Yeah. I'm more interested in like vitality for as long as I possibly can.
But what do you, okay. Are you ready? What does that mean to you? And I'm going to put a word in here. I'm going to just like insert myself into this. And to me, that means being functionally capable, strong, activities of daily living, able to balance, able to lift things up, able to be cognitively fit.
We're on it. You and I are on it.
Health do you know span. What that, and right. Do you know what is a direct correlation to that?
Wait, hold on. Could it be? It is, isn't it? Muscle, tissue, organ health.
So do you see what's happening right now is that we have these conversations about longevity, and the driver of longevity that people are talking about is protein restriction. Now, with everything that we are talking about, can you see where that is doing a tremendous amount of harm to the people in the middle? So the way and the time that you protect your muscle is now, right? 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Doesn't get easier. That tissue is, you know, listen, it's not easier to get jacked and tan. It becomes more difficult. So if the message midlife is we are doing these practices for longevity, then those practices need to be about optimizing skeletal muscle, not living 6 months longer frail in a nursing home.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So then course correct me on this. Let's say I've got 30 grams of protein on a meal, and I'm adding amino acids to it. Does that take it up to plus 10? Like
Well, it takes it up. Yes. In a way that, it really is about leucine, and at 30 grams a meal, you're getting about 2.5 grams of leucine. And that's the minimum amount. You probably would do better at 3.5 grams of leucine. So by adding in another, 5 grams total of branched chain amino acids, you raise that protein threshold.
Okay.
Simple as that. Simple.
Good. Okay. All right. This is awesome. And so then, it's the clear takeaway again is invest in your muscle organ tissue. And then one way to do that is protein optimization. And it feels like there's some competing principles about autophagy, muscle health, protein, and intermittent fasting. It feels like there's some competing interests here. And what you're saying is like first order business, restricted feeding time or eating time is cool. Sure. As long as you can get in a pound per body weight, ideal body weight. And one way to do that is to have consistency over protein and then potentially add, aminos. So let's talk about some of the things that are controversial. Like, what are the most controversial things that you say about nutrition that just get people lit up? I'll give you the first pass at it.
This is really funny. So I've been doing this 20 years. I'm currently trained and mentored by one of the world leading protein experts. A decade ago, it was not controversial. So this is this huge push between the anti-animal narrative and animal-based proteins that you have to understand that never existed, right? This was not a conversation, quality of protein. These are hard, fast biological values. Nobody argued about this. And the reason I started being so vocal is because I was so taken aback by the scapegoat of animal-based proteins when, I'm a trained geriatrician, which means I'm trained in taking care of individuals later on in life. And I was just looking at all this information that is being fed to our youth, that is being fed to kind of the people in the middle trying to do the right thing about how they should restrict protein and go plant-based. And I felt like it was really that there are unintended consequences for this advice. So, in my family, if you have a capacity to change something or you have the ability to do it, it's your responsibility. I mean, frankly, I would love to be doing other things, right? Talk about something else. But again, I feel very much a responsibility to humanity to at least open the eyes to the conversation.
Okay. And right underneath that is when you start talking about you need to eat animal-based protein, your community starts to get lit up. And
They could not, right? They could eat plant-based proteins. But again, if we're talking about whole foods, which I believe in a whole food diet, I think it becomes very difficult to eat enough tofu to meet your protein needs. Can you do it? Totally. Do I think that that's probably the best strategy? If we're talking about whole foods, I think you're going to have a really hard time getting iron. I think you're going to have a really hard time getting creatine for muscle health, taurine and serine. I think that things are going to be difficult.
Okay. So help me navigate this path a bit. I was 6 years I was a vegan. I was not healthy. This was in 1989, and there was no Whole Foods. There was none of that. And it was really hard. And so I did it for compassion. I did it for philosophical reasons, and I was lifting a lot. Fitness was important, and it just, I don't think I was healthy. Okay. So I figured out a different path. And then 2 years ago, maybe not 4 years ago, Dr. Melanie Joy came on the podcast, and she's like, she made a point. She's like, you have a dog? And I was like, yeah. You pet your dog? Yeah. Would you pet a cow? I was like, yeah, they're cute. You know, and she, why don't you eat your dog then? You know, I'm oversimplifying a very smart woman's approach. And I was like, oh yeah, like what am I doing? So it re-triggered an examination for me to go back, and I'm no longer eating since then. It was like 4 years. I'm not eating four-legged animals. Mm. And you know, I think there's something about that that's important to me right now. And I really don't want to eat chicken. You know, like there's something about it that I'm not vibing, but I am eating it right now, and I'm definitely eating fish. Mm. And there's some compromises that I'm sure I'm missing.
Yeah.
And so how would you help thread that?
So I think one of the first things is to appreciate what you're saying. And I think if someone feels that way, then they are absolutely, you know, entitled to feel that way. And that should be respected first and foremost. And for those philosophical reasons, you know, it's now about how do we navigate a nutrition plan that provides you with everything that you need. Right? As opposed to someone saying, animal-based products are not good for me. They're not good for the planet. Like all these other things, which perhaps I don't agree with. But for someone who is having these philosophical experiences, making sure you're, like, I would supplement you with creatine. You're not getting creatine.
So I was. Great. And I popped on a blood test with like high creatinine. Is that how you
said it? But if you have high muscle mass, then you'll have a high creatinine.
So-
Creatinine.
Yeah. So at first pass, the medical providers were like, oh God, you shouldn't. And then when I started, when I talked to a few folks like yourself that understand that, they're like, yeah, it's no big deal. Of course you're going to, of course that's going to pop. So I should probably get back on that. I haven't made that connection, or haven't kind of gone back on.
And then the other thing is I never look at creatinine. I look at it, but we get a cystatin C to actually look at a corrected kidney function.
You do.
So yeah, you have to get a corrected GFR.
Okay.
And that's really important for an astute provider. If you have any physicians listening, to just look at the creatinine ratio is not, you know, you have to look at cystatin C. So omega-3s are very important. You are eating fish. So obviously
I supplement that as well.
Yeah. Okay.
I do every 6 months to a year, a full kind of performance panel, if you will.
Perfect.
And, yeah, for some reason, I don't quite metabolize properly. So I do need to supplement that.
Perfect. And then iron, you know, making sure your iron and ferritin stores are good.
Both are good.
It's very important.
Okay.
You know, and the other thing that I recommend is vitamin D, which is, you know, just, and again, checking levels. So those were the things that I would do. And then for you specifically, you know, a good multivitamin, making sure you're getting enough choline for brain function. B vitamins are also really important, all of which you can assess, right? You can take a look at that in blood work. And then if you are not training a lot, you know, you just want to make sure that your carbohydrates are in check.
So how do you recommend, I'm not eating chicken breast for breakfast. How would you stack if somebody has, you know, some limited animal proteins, and I'm not eating salmon for breakfast either, you know, or...
Eggs?
Too many eggs, probably. So I do. I definitely eat eggs. What else do you suggest are good sources?
So, I mean, it depends on your activity level, but the plant-based protein. Well, I mean, so then you have a great flexibility for your carbohydrate ingestion. So with some of the, you know, tofu and soy.
Wait, we agreed. I got to get like 50 pounds in. Or 50 grams in. So how am I going to get 50 grams in at breakfast?
I mean, quite frankly, eggs and a protein shake.
Will you debunk that myth that egg whites are not as good as whole eggs?
No, I mean, just if we think about this logically, you need things in its entirety.
Entirety,
right? Yeah.
So each egg is 6 grams, right? Yolk plus 6 grams. So I need 10.
You could get away with two or three eggs, okay, which would put you two or three eggs in a protein shake. Be great.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing actually.
Yep. Easy. Throw a scoop of creatine in there. You're good.
You know what I've been craving, interestingly enough? Greek yogurt. I used to think it's the grossest thing that anyone would ever like eat. And then for some odd reason, I think I know why.
I mean, you've got to get your calcium. Where are you getting your calcium?
Yeah.
I guess you could get it through the, through greens, cooking greens, but how much are you going to be getting? You know?
So this, you know what happened? Like I said, I thought it was really gross. And then I had a staph infection. I went to have my annual checkup I grew up surfing. So make sure like no moles are out of place.
Right.
I had to do my annual checkup and I had this little cut on my arm and I didn't pay attention to it. And I came back and it was just really stingy and itchy that night. And I looked at it the next morning and it was like, oh God, I got staph infection. Mm. And so I had to take a course of antibiotics, which I'm not a fan of. And so this is a long way to get to, like, antibiotics will save your life, my life, maybe at some point, because there's some stuff that we need to do, but it wreaks havoc on the body, gut biome in particular. So what do you do for folks that need to post surgery, post something where they're on an antibiotic? Mm-hmm. And that's where this craving for Greek yogurt came from, you know? So I didn't know if I should supplement probiotics while I was taking the antibiotics. So I didn't. I just waited until I was done with the antibiotics. But can you sharpen up what to do if folks have to get on a course of antibiotics?
Yeah. So I was, I have a really great friend and she actually runs the Cedars-Sinai Microbiome Institute.
Cool.
And we were having a conversation. And one of the things that we were talking about is this whole probiotic, prebiotic kind of conversation. And one of the things that we were talking about is it's really in the prebiotic, the fermentation that can be very beneficial. And it's not just the prebiotics, but it's what the bacteria utilizes to actually create a healthy milieu, a healthy gut milieu. So for me, we supplement in my clinic prebiotic, whether it's prebiotic fibers, kombucha, fermented foods to actually help the gut microbiome generate what it needs.
Okay. Talk about wine for a minute.
Actually, if you are a postmenopausal woman, you are on the wine diet, you need to stop. If you are worried about your weight, the alcohol consumption is something that I see so much of in that perimenopausal space where women are struggling to sleep. Don't do it.
So anyway, certainly on sleep. But other health factors as well, alcohol in general, do you have thoughts?
Yeah, I don't recommend it. You know, again, I feel like it affects cognitive reserve and that's the brain capacity I come from, you know, the side of geriatrics where people will say, okay, you know, one of the things that we looked at for brain aging and brain health was if individuals were drinking and typically we would have them very much limit alcohol consumption.
Okay. Very cool. Kind of last little interesting question from Carrie Walsh Jennings, who we mentioned at the top of the podcast, is she knows that you work with some of the most extraordinary folks in the world, special operators being included. Obviously, you're married to one as well. Just some thoughts of your observations about, you know, how they organize their life, like the spirit behind those that sacrifice everything.
Yes.
For a purpose. Yes.
Well, there's two things there. Number one, there is a focus and commitment unlike anything I've ever seen. And that, you know, I take care of CEOs and people that are really moving the needle in the world. And there is a commitment and focus and self-reflection that I've never seen. I mean, it's tremendous, number one. Number two, actually, I'll give you three things. Their capacity for suffering is very, very, very high, yet not internalized as suffering. And then the third thing is they're all incredibly aware of their weaknesses.
Those are really cool takeaways. Yeah. Would you substitute pain for suffering in the first part of the, or in the middle insight? Is that they can handle high volumes of pain, but they don't internalize it to make it suffering?
So I think that the pain doesn't have to be physical pain. So for example, if there is a target that needs to be accomplished and this individual is driving forward, you know, working, you know, all hours of the day, highly focused, 4 hours of sleep and going, you know, no complaints going after it, but no physical pain, just a high level of what I would consider suffering. But for that individual, the mission and the why behind the execution is so strong that it diminishes that internal suffering. It's not even, it's so tightly controlled, right? There is no narrative about what is happening. And that's so profound.
So you have a deeper connection to the special teams and operators. Mm-hmm. That insight was shared to me by an operator. And the way that I internalized it was, when purpose is bigger than pain, oh, yeah, purpose wins. You know, but when pain is bigger than purpose, pain wins. Mm-hmm. And so it's up to us to figure out a large purpose. Then, mm-hmm, by default, we will be able to manage, deal with, tolerate, even embrace,
yeah,
great levels of pain. And then just in just a recent episode, we had Dr. Rachel Zofnis on, and she hit on exactly what you just talked about, which is her insight was that there is no such thing as a separation between physical and emotional pain. All pain is physical and emotional, which is a really cool insight.
Mm. Yeah, interesting.
Okay, so if I wanted to spend time with you professionally, yes, and or any of our community members wanted to be able to do that, it feels like it would be $100,000 to get in your door.
No.
You know, and I think you're saying, no, of course not. You know, but like, but that would be because of your expertise and your, yes, fluidity here. How would somebody be able to work with you? Like, what are the steps to be able to do, yeah, that?
So they would apply. So if you know them personally, you could always vet them for me and make the recommendation, or they can always apply to be a patient on my website. That's obviously Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, very active on Instagram. Again, Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. I have a new show, which is shocking, the Dr. Gabrielle Lyon Show. I only did that so people could find me, where we have very transparent conversations. And
the show is the podcast, the, yep, video-based podcast.
It's actually both. It's both. Sorry. It's YouTube and, you know, Spotify, Apple. It's audio and video.
Doc, thank you. I'm grateful for Carrie putting this together. And I am going to challenge our community to get engaged with your insights, your practices, and maybe potentially become a patient. Is there a last takeaway? One or two, three things, even just one, to sum it up, tie it up, like takeaways that you would hope people could pay attention to and do more frequently?
Yeah. So number one, muscle is the organ of longevity, and we can move the needle in a positive manner by having a muscle-centric approach, is really having a capable approach to all domains of life. Number one, we talked about resistance training. We talked about physical activity, talk about dietary protein, regardless of whatever camp you are into, whether it's animal-based or whether it is plant-based, the concept of protein should not be divisive. So that is the muscle-centric approach. The second part to that is, if you care about your business, your health, family, you must be aware of your weaknesses. The most successful people that I take care of, which they are incredible, they are all aware of their weaknesses. They leverage those weaknesses to become strengths.
Yeah. Okay. Beautiful. What a testament to your approach to life, your philosophy, your love for helping, yeah, others, and your intimate loved ones. So, Doc, thank you. And yeah, I hope that our paths cross.
Me too. Thank you, okay, so much for, awesome, your time.
All the best. All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.